Well, g'day, my name is Ross, and happy Easter. Now, the writing has been on the wall all morning. In fact, it's been on a table tennis table out the back here. And it says, and the question must be asked, how do you feel about Easter? Well, luckily, we have some help in working that out. So, I'd like to have some volunteers maybe in a minute. I've got a pointer. It's actually a broken drumstick. So it's what you get when you're the father of a drummer. And we can point to the things that we feel. So for example, you might feel today very angry because there's been hot cross buns in the supermarket since Christmas. And that's not acceptable. Or maybe you're feeling very hungry because you've had lots of hot cross buns maybe on Friday, and today you've found some other things, some chocolate things lying around, so maybe you're hungry. Or maybe, and I didn't put this one up because I was a bit worried about people putting it down, but maybe you've already had lots of hot cross buns and Easter eggs and you feel sick. So maybe I'll stick it right down the bottom here as well. So you can point to that one. Does anyone want to come out and tell us, how do you feel about Easter? I'll pass the baton. Oh, yeah. Yeah, come, yeah. And then you, how do you feel about Easter? Passing the baton.
Ooh, ooh. Okay, this will be a hard one. I've got multiple conflicted feelings. On the one hand, I'm definitely here because we have our annual, I'm definitely conflicted, we have our annual sort of Sunday lamb Easter meal, so I'm looking forward to that. But on the whole, I have to say I'm probably feeling a bit of this, which is caused by both my excitement of Easter because Christ is risen, combined with a lot of sugar from Easter eggs that I secretly ate while I thought no one was watching. So that's where I'm between here and here.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Should we come with you? Come right up the front. You take the baton. Come right up. This is William. So William's going to show us what he feels too. How do you feel about Easter, William? Do you want to point to one? Which one are you going to point to? You feel very... Yeah, do you want to say what that is? Is that happy?
Happy.
Yeah, good stuff. Well done. You got that? Well done, William. Passing of the baton now to Liam. Do you want to take the microphone too, Liam?
So, I feel very happy.
Ooh, that's a different happy. Good. What's going on here as well?
Praying?
Yeah.
I think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting.
And I also feel hungry.
Feel hungry as well. Excellent. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Madeline, do you want to come up? Passing the baton over. A couple more here. We've got two. Can you say what that is?
Happy.
You're happy? Yeah. Excellent. I'll leave the hat stick. Thanks. Anyone else want to have a go? Got room for one or two more if you want. I got one hand up over here as well. Do you want to go? Yep. This is Theo who's coming out. So you might notice there's actually these faces are all stuck up outside. So you can talk about this after as well. So if you don't get a chance now. Here, Theo, do you want the mic as well? How do you feel? Now, your dad's already been up here, so he's told us a little bit about stuff that's going on in your house. Definitely there, yep. Any others? No. The green one. Well done. Are you feeling okay? Do you need any medicine or anything? You're all right? Okay, just checking. All right. What's really interesting, we get a lot of different responses, and I think it's very easy for us to come here today already feeling this, and I think a lot of us do, the triumph of Jesus rising and being alive again. But as we listen to the Bible reading, we actually get a whole lot of other stuff going on as well. There's all sorts of things happening. And in our Bible reading, there were three people who were named specifically. There's a few other, there's Jesus and there's some disciples and then there's some angels. But the people we hear about are Mary Magdalene, who's one of Jesus' best friends, has been hanging around with the group for a while. And there's two disciples that are named. Peter is one. And the other one is a guy curiously called the disciple who Jesus loved. Now, I thought he loved all his disciples, but this one, I think, is John. He's being very modest. He wrote the book. So we think that's who he is. Now, I think at the start of the Bible reading, we actually see this. We see shock. And it's just, they're not really expecting this. and it turns everything upside down and changes everything. And I think the overriding feeling on that first Easter morning is probably shock. And then we see Peter and John come running, and I think we go straight here because Peter's not very fit, and John runs faster than him and gets there. So Peter's puffing for a little while. Then I think we get a little bit of this. They're really confused for a while. And they look at the strips of linen and they can't work out what's actually happened. And there's just this little hint of very gradual, happy realization. And I like this picture, very glassy eyed. Then Mary's wandering around the garden and lots of stuff may have been going through her head by that stage. So maybe she was a little bit angry. Maybe she was a little bit scared about what was going to happen next. She was definitely very sad still. And I think there's a lot of doubt going on for her as well. She even talks to Jesus and doesn't recognize him. She thinks he's a gardener. She's not looking for a risen person at all. So how do you feel about Easter? I think eventually in the story, we do get to hear as well this overjoyed response. But just like us, sometimes, or like them, sometimes we might take a little while to get there. How do you feel about Easter today? Maybe you're still confused, or maybe there's some doubt. And for some of the kids here, they may not know how this story all fits in. And if that's you, you can ask some questions today of your parents or people you know who can help you answer them. How do you feel about Easter? I think we can get to here. But one of the reasons Jesus died is so we can have confidence that he rose again, so that we can have confidence that he has beaten sin. And so we can get to these responses. That one and this one. So we can respond to God with our prayers and with our words, whether they're spoken or whether they're sung. How do you feel about Easter?
It's a good question, isn't it? How do you feel about Easter? It's hard to put into words, isn't it? That's why I think the emojis are really helpful, and it's really great that Ross has been able to explain all of those for us. A few years ago, the BBC in England asked people to write in and tell them, what do you feel about Easter? What do you think about Easter? What does Easter mean to you? And for most people who wrote in, what Easter meant was a chance to have a holiday, a long weekend, time off work. Second thing that they wrote in about was they were complaining about how busy the roads were because everyone was on holiday. Third thing they wrote in about was the confusion they had at why Easter wasn't on the same date every single year. That caused a lot of confusion. A not uncommon response was something like the following. As I'm retired from work and do not believe in God, Easter means absolutely nothing to me. Or another person, Easter means nothing to me, but the rise of commercialism of Easter is alarming. Or someone else, it means a four-day weekend for me, nothing else really, except that I have to buy my nephew and niece an Easter egg. Not a lot of excitement in those homes, is there? Not a lot of this going on, or even that going on, I would suggest. So how do you feel this morning? How do you feel about Easter? Even for believers, it can be difficult to put this into words. So I want to think further about the story that we've heard read and Ross has alluded to. I wonder what Mary Magdalene would have been feeling on that first Easter day. I think she would have been feeling a veritable storm of emotions, shock and surprise being the paramount. I think she had three shocks at least. The first shock was that the stone in front of the tomb had been rolled away. Now, that is pretty hard work. That would take some concerted effort by probably a couple of blokes to move the stone. And she'd been there at the cross. She'd seen what had happened to Jesus' body, and she might have been wondering, have people been disturbing his body? Couldn't they just leave him alone? Haven't they done enough to him? The second shock she has is that the tomb is empty. She looks in and there is nobody. Where's Jesus? They've taken the Lord out of the tomb and we don't know where they've put him, she tells Peter and John. So what's happened? I mean, dead bodies just don't pop round to the local cafe for a coffee, do they? Now, if that wasn't enough of a shock, her third shock is that she finds herself talking to a couple of angels. That's not a very common experience in my life. When was the last time you found yourself in conversation with a couple of angels? And they add to her confusion because they ask her a dumb question. Why are you crying? She's crying because Jesus has died and now she can't find the body. It's pretty obvious. What sort of angels are you? So what sort of state would Mary have been in? Shock, grief, confusion, even anger, perhaps. She must have been feeling so many things. It's no wonder she was crying. Now the scene shifts to the two blokes, Peter the impetuous and John the beloved, otherwise known here as the other disciple. They too would have been shocked when they heard Mary's report, and that's why they rushed to the tomb to see if it's true, and they find it's true. The tomb is open, the body has gone. And that's a lot to take in, especially when you're a bloke. It's a lot to process all at once. Have you ever had that experience where you get really, really good news or really, really bad news and your mind starts whirring and going at a million miles an hour? Like, for example, you've passed, or you've failed. Or if you're a parent, your son's been in a car accident, or your daughter is pregnant. Or if you're a house buyer, your bid has been accepted, or it hasn't. You know that it's a lot to take in. A lot of emotion can occur all at the same time. So these two disciples are there. The Lord is risen, but, and they're processing this. It says John saw and believed, but they still didn't understand. So faith and incomprehension are all mixed into this moment. You can imagine Peter going, I just don't get it. And maybe the beloved disciple says, well, I believe it, but I don't understand it. And then the scene shifts again. And Jesus appears to Mary, the risen Lord Jesus. Mary, he says, and she recognises the voice. She didn't recognise him in person, but no one says her name like Jesus, Mary. And that one word overturns her whole world. It tips it upside down, and her emotions change again. Her grief turns to joy, her amazement to adoration, her desperation to devotion. Her mind is taking it in that, yes, he's risen. Something in her spirit responds, knowing this is true. And then before you know it, she's been commissioned to go and tell everybody else this good news. So she goes saying, I've seen the Lord. I have seen the Lord. I've seen the Lord. I've seen the Lord. And she begins telling everybody that the Lord is risen. And everyone says, he's risen indeed. No, they don't. Let's step back from the story a little bit. When Mary comes to the tomb, it's early in the morning and it's still dark. In John's gospel, darkness is a symbol, a metaphor of everything that stands against Jesus. Evil, chaos, sin, Satan. And darkness also hints at the emotional state of Mary and the disciples at the start of this important day, this momentous first Easter day. They're filled with dark feelings like sadness and fear and doubt and anxiety. The darkness of death has entombed Jesus and paralyzed his followers. But then Jesus appears to Mary, and the resurrection of Jesus changes everything. Light replaces darkness. John's gospel begins with a statement like this: the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. And at this point in the story of the resurrection, John is showing how the darkness has been overcome by light. Hope now replaces doom. Peace replaces fear. Joy replaces sadness. Triumph replaces defeat. And light replaces darkness. Why? Because the resurrection replaces death. This is the new emotional landscape for Jesus' followers then on that first day, and for those of you gathered here today who say that Jesus is your Lord. Again, let's widen the perspective. In the beginning of the Bible, God says, "Let there be light," and he brings order out of chaos and he creates the world as it is. And at the beginning of John's Gospel, John says, "There was the Word, and the Word was light, Jesus, the light of the world, who has now been raised from the darkness of death." You see, everything has changed. Everything is different because of the resurrection. Creation and new creation are all wrapped up together in the resurrection of Jesus, which promises any of his followers that they too will be part of the new creation, resurrected from the dead. Peter will say shortly in one of his letters, "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ." The resurrection changes everything. How do you feel about that? It's a lot to take in, isn't it? A lot to process. It can be hard to put into words. So here are some further words to help us as we process and think and reflect.